Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine you are reading a critical instruction manual.
Oh, right, like something you absolutely need to get right.
Exactly. Let's say it is the manual on how to build a vital engine component for a jet you are, you know, currently flying. You're reading along, line by line, but suddenly you hit a page that is just completely garbled.
Like a printing error.
Yeah, the text is a mess, the diagrams are overlapping, and because of this one ruined page, the rest of the book is completely impossible to read. The instructions are just broken.
That sounds stressful.
It is. But now, what if you could just slap a sticky note over that specific garbled page? A note telling the reader to simply skip it, allowing the rest of the manual to flow and make enough sense to, well, keep the engine running.
So if we translate that manual into human biology, the book is your DNA, and that garbled page is a genetic mutation. And the sticky note is a therapeutic approach. It's designed to bypass the error so the cell can still produce a functional, albeit, you know, slightly shorter, protein.
That is exactly what scientists do to treat severe genetic diseases. What happens when that sticky note just isn't sticky enough?
Or, what if the body's cellular machinery simply ignores the note entirely and tries to read the garbled page anyway?
Exactly. How can we force the cell to pay attention without causing total chaos? That is the core puzzle we are diving into today.
It's a puzzle that has really frustrated the field of RNA therapeutics for years. I mean, the conceptual idea of the sticky note approach is incredibly sound on paper.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
But it is constantly met with the harsh reality of biological delivery and, well, cellular resistance.
Today, we celebrate the work of an international and multi-institutional team who have advanced our understanding of RNA-targeted therapeutics and muscular dystrophy.
It's a massive collaboration.
It really is. We are pulling from a 2026 paper published in PNAS, looking at a breakthrough involving researchers from Nanjing Antisense Biopharm, Nanjing Normal University, Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory, and Guangzhou Asakura Pharmaceuticals.
And our mission for this deep dive is to understand not just what they discovered, but how they completely redesigned our approach to genetic editing.
Right, but to really grasp the weight of their methodology, we need to establish the clinical problem they're addressing.
Yeah, we're talking about Duchenne muscular dystrophy, or DMD.
Which is devastating.
It is a severe genetic disorder. It is caused by mutations, often large deletions of genetic code, actually, in the DMD gene. And that gene is responsible for producing a protein called dystrophin.
Dystrophin. So that is essentially the shock absorber for our muscle fibers, right?
That's a great way to put it. It anchors the internal cytoskeleton of a muscle cell to the extracellular matrix. It basically protects the fibers from the mechanical stress of contracting and relaxing.
So without that shock absorber,
without it, every single time a muscle contracts, the cell membranes sustain tiny tears. So the muscle cells progressively accumulate damage, they become inflamed, and eventually die.
And they get replaced by fat and scar tissue, right?
Exactly. In DMD, these genetic mutations disrupt the reading frame. Returning to your manual analogy, the garbled page doesn't just confuse the reader.
It shifts all the subsequent text out of alignment.
Yes. The cellular machinery reads it, produces nonsense, and prematurely stops building the dystrophin protein altogether.
And the result is severe progressive muscle degeneration affecting skeletal muscles and, critically, the heart.
Yeah, the cardiac implications are usually the most fatal part.
Okay, let's unpack this. If you are listening to this and keeping up with genetic medicine, you might be thinking, well, we aren't starting from zero here.
Right, we're not.
We already have FDA-approved drugs that act as our genetic sticky notes. There's a well-known one called eteplirsen.
Yeah, eteplirsen is an antisense oligonucleotide, or ASO. It's a short synthetic string of nucleic acids, and it's designed to bind to a specific region of the pre-mRNA specifically, a section called exon 51.
Exon 51, got it.
By binding there, it physically masks the exon from the cell's splicing machinery. The spliceosome, which acts like a molecular editor, sees the ASO, skips over exon 51 entirely, and splices the surrounding pieces together.
Restoring the reading frame.
Exactly. Allowing the cell to produce a partially functional, truncated dystrophin protein.
But wait, if eteplirsen already acts as a sticky note and successfully skips the faulty exon, I'm confused why this new paper even exists. Is the human body just washing the sticky note away?
The limitation lies in pharmacokinetics, how the drug moves through and behaves in the body. The current generation of ASOs basically lack the necessary potency, Eteplirsen and similar conditionally approved ASOs have limited clinical efficacy because they struggle to achieve robust therapeutic outcomes in extrahepatic tissues.
Extrahepatic meaning outside the liver.
Right.
Because the liver acts as the body's filter, it tends to absorb the vast majority of any drug you inject, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. That the liver acts like a sponge for these therapeutics. Getting enough of the drug past the liver, and specifically into skeletal muscle, is incredibly difficult.
I can imagine.
And getting it into cardiac muscle is a massive hurdle. As a result, you have to administer incredibly high, repeated doses just to get a marginal clinical benefit.
So the sticky note works in a test tube, but in the actual human body, the muscle cells are fortified like castles.
Pretty much.
And even if a few sticky notes get inside, the cell's editor is just reading right through them.
Yeah, the cell's natural splicing signals are just very strong. The ASO is essentially competing with the cell's own highly efficient machinery.
Mm-hmm.
To overcome this, the researchers in this study didn't just try to force more drug into the cells. They completely redesigned the architecture of the sticky note itself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they developed a breakthrough technology they call the 5D ASO, which stands for 5-foot splicite decoy ASO.
Hold on, you just lost me. U1 snRNA, 5-foot splicites. Let's take a step back. What exactly is a U1 scout doing in a normal, healthy cell?
Okay, fair enough. In a healthy cell, your DNA is transcribed into a rough draft of RNA called pre-mRNA. This rough draft has alternating sections, exons, which are the important instructions, and introns, which are filler sequences that need to be cut out. The machinery that cuts out the introns and pastes the exons together is called the spliceosome.
Okay, so the spliceosome is the factory machine doing the actual cutting and pasting.
Exactly. And the spliceosome needs to know exactly where to cut. That is where U1 comes in. U1 is a small nuclear ribonucleoprotein.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah, it's a complex of RNA and proteins. Just think of it as the scout for the spliceosome. It physically scans the rough draft of RNA, hunting for a specific sequence of letters called the 5-foot site. That site marks the boundary of an exon.
Oh, I see.
When U1 finds that site and binds to it, it flags the area. It's essentially shouting to the rest of the spliceosome, hey, cut here.
So the traditional drug, eteplirsen, just lays flat over that boundary to hide it from the U1 scout. But what does this new 5D ASO do differently?
A 5D ASO is a two-part molecule. The main body of the molecule is the traditional antisense portion. It targets and binds to the specific exon we want to skip, just like the old drugs.
Okay, so that part is the same.
But the innovation is the addition of a tiny tail. It's a carefully designed sequence of just 8 nucleotides dangling off the end.
So instead of just laying a flat sticky note over the genetic typo, we're attaching a little tail to it, like a lure on a fishing line to distract the cell's editing machinery.
That is exactly it. That physical distraction is the core mechanism. The researchers optimized those 8 nucleotides to perfectly mimic a 5-foot splice site. Because it's a perfect chemical match, it base pairs with the free end of the U1 scout. So when the 5D ASO enters the nucleus and binds to the exon we want to skip, that dangling tail acts as a powerful decoy. It snags the U1 complexes right out of the local environment. It sequesters them.
Right.
The local splicing machinery gets completely misdirected away from the actual boundaries of the exon. The exon is repressed, and the skipping effect is drastically enhanced.
Wait, I need to clarify something. When we talk about these drugs, we often hear terms like MOE and PMO. Are those just chemical armors we put on the RNA so the body doesn't chew it up?
Yeah, they function as molecular armor.
And if so, does adding this decoy tail complicate that armor?
Not at all. Naturally occurring RNA is incredibly fragile. If you inject raw RNA into the bloodstream, enzymes called nucleases will shred it in minutes. So scientists use modified chemical backbones like MOE or PMO or OMA modifications.
Right, to make the drug invisible to the nucleases?
Exactly. What is vital about the 5D ASO design is that the decoy mechanism relies purely on basic RNA base pairing. It doesn't require recruiting bulky secondary proteins to work. Therefore, the researchers found that this 8 nucleotide tail works seamlessly across all those different complex chemical backbones.
That makes perfect sense. It's like a universal adapter.
Yeah.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Let's look at the actual data, because theoretical elegance is one thing, but what happened when they put this into living systems? They didn't just test this in standard mice, right?
No, they used a highly specialized model called the HU52 mouse. HU stands for humanized.
Humanized mice.
Yeah, the researchers essentially replaced a large segment of the mouse's genome with the human sequence for the DMD gene. Furthermore, the delta 52 means exon 52 is deleted.
So they created a mouse that perfectly mimics a common human mutation causing severe muscular dystrophy. And because it has human genetic sequences, they can test the exact drug designed for human patients.
That's right. They compared their new decoy-enhanced ASO, which they called 000A L8C.
Catchy name.
Yeah, with L8Cs denoting that tiny 8-nucleotide lure. And they compared it against the traditional decoyless version modeled on eteplirsen, which they called MOE-ETEP. They administered the drugs and measured how effectively the target exon was skipped.
When you look at the data, the leap in efficiency is staggering. The researchers found that just 3 milligrams per kilogram of the decoy-enhanced drug achieved the exact same level of exon skipping as, wait for it, 100 milligrams per kilogram of the older decoyless version.
Yeah, that represents a roughly 30-fold increase in potency.
That's earthfold.
In the world of pharmacology, you might spend a decade trying to achieve a 2- or 3-fold improvement. A 30-fold increase changes the entire landscape of treatment. It means you could potentially administer a tiny fraction of the current dose to get the same clinical effect, which minimizes side effects. Or you could use the standard dose and achieve a level of therapeutic rescue we have never seen before.
And it wasn't just a molecular trick. We aren't just looking at RNA bands on a laboratory gel here. This translated into actual physical phenotypic rescue for these mice, right?
Absolutely. They restored the dystrophin protein in both the skeletal muscle and the historically difficult to treat heart muscle.
That's huge.
The functional rescue was profound. The mice treated with the 5D ASO went through physical evaluations, and they showed significantly improved grip strength across all 4 limbs compared to the untreated mice.
We can actually quantify that muscle health internally too. They measured serum creatine kinase, or CK.
Right.
If you are unfamiliar with CK, it is an enzyme found inside healthy muscle cells. When muscle fibers are damaged or rupture, which happens constantly in muscular dystrophy, that CK leaks out into the bloodstream. So high CK in the blood is a classic distress signal for muscle degeneration.
And in the untreated mice, the CK levels were catastrophic. They were averaging 6,715 units per liter.
And when they treated them with the highest dose of the new 5D ASO,
the levels plummeted down to just 1,041 units per liter.
Wow.
That objective biochemical marker confirms that the muscle fibers are no longer degrading at that rapid rate. The dystrophin shock absorbers are back online and protecting the cells.
I have to play devil's advocate here, though. A mouse metabolism is incredibly fast, and their biology is quite different from ours. We've cured mice of countless diseases over the decades without it translating to humans. Does this decoy mechanism actually hold up in something closer to us? Mice are great, but does this work in a primate?
The researchers progressed their testing to cynomolgus monkeys.
Oh, macaques.
Yes. This is a critical translational step because these non-human primates share the exact same genetic sequence for human exon 51. It is a one-to-one biological test run for the drug's targeting mechanism.
And how do the monkeys fare? Delivery to a large primate's muscle tissue is notoriously difficult.
They administered the lead 5D ASO biweekly via intravenous infusion, and the data held up. They observed marked dose-dependent exon skipping in both skeletal tissues, specifically the diaphragm and quadriceps, and crucially, they saw significant skipping in the heart tissue.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It demonstrated that the decoy mechanism scales effectively into large primates.
So what does this all mean? If we are throwing thousands of these tiny, highly effective decoys into a primate's cells, couldn't that accidentally mess up the splicing of thousands of other healthy genes? If I hijack the U1 scouts to focus on this one specific mutation, won't other genes get accidentally ignored or cut short? The spliceosome has to edit the rest of the genome properly to keep the cell alive.
What's fascinating here is that the cellular biology naturally buffers this risk. U1 SNRNP is incredibly abundant in cells.
Abundant enough to spare.
Exactly. The researchers conducted exhaustive off-target analyses, proving there is a safe concentration window. At effective therapeutic doses, the 5D ASO skipped the target DMD exon without causing global splicing defects. And they specifically checked to make sure it wasn't triggering premature cleavage and polyadenylation, or PCPA.
PCPA, what is that?
When a gene is transcribed, U1 acts as a shield to stop the RNA transcript from being chopped up before the whole gene is read. If U1 is missing, those transcripts get cut prematurely.
Oh.
But the decoys didn't trigger this in other genes, like MT or STK17A, which are highly sensitive to U1 depletion.
So the drug hits the target without causing friendly fire.
Right. Furthermore, your analysis and blood tests in the monkey trial showed a highly favorable safety profile. The monkeys tolerated it well.
If we look at the broader implications, This isn't just about DMD, is it?
No, the researchers proved this method works on multiple other genes. They tested it on SMN1 and SMN2 for spinal muscular atrophy, APP for Alzheimer's, and PKM for cancer. It worked across the board.
That is incredible. But we still have that overarching delivery hurdle, right? Getting it through the tough exterior of a muscle cell in a human patient.
Delivery remains the grand challenge. In the future, combining these 5D ASOs with targeted delivery systems like antibody oligonucleotide conjugates, or AOCs, could push their efficacy even higher.
By using an antibody like a homing missile to pull the drug inside the cell,
exactly.
Let's distill all of this down to our core takeaways. By appending a tiny 8-nucleotide decoy tail to antisense oligonucleotides, researchers can safely and intentionally misdirect the cell's splicing machinery. This simple structural modification yields up to a 30-fold increase in exon-skipping potency in vivo, offering a powerful new platform for treating genetic diseases like Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
It really is a massive step forward.
What does this mean for the future of genetic medicine? If a simple 8-letter decoy can transform a marginal treatment into a highly potent therapy?
It's a question that is going to drive a lot of research in the coming years.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoy this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Late nights under fluorescent skies, we read the body's tangled lines. A missing line, a heavy cost, but we don't leave the rhythm lost. So we whisper to the splice site gate, a tiny tale to change its fate. A decoy note, a subtle steer, and sudden clarity draws near. Skip the broken beat, let the song go on. Cut the wrong frame, bring the strength back on. From a silent page to a muscle spark, we find the light in the after dark. On bright screen, patterns start to show. 7, 8, just enough to hold. Guiding you one down a side street turn, so the right new version can return. Not too much, keep the balance true. Strong enough to pull us through. From cell to tissue, test by test. Safer window, a stronger rest. Skip the broken beat, let the song go on. Raise a new dawn where the strain had won. A little decoy, a cleaner line. And every step says, we've got time.